Welcome to Beer Fueled. I am your host, Chris Hopper. As always, joined by Ryan Miner and Dan Thury. Ryan, how you feeling, buddy?
Hello.
Y'all excited? Like,
oh my God.
How's the atmosphere up in Detroit?
Detroit's back in like 1970, back when I wasn't even born yet, but it's like that atmosphere right now. We're just freaking, it is lit up. It's super, dude, it's so blue around here. It's crazy. Honolulu blue everywhere.
Hell yeah.
I'm ecstatic. I mean, I got my Lions gear on, so it's like I'm all Lionsed out.
Oh, you should be. It's got to be super exciting for y'all, and I think that most of America is pulling for you at this point.
Oh, yeah, I'm pulling for us.
I've been
also
back and forth on if I really want to root for the Lions or the Niners.
No,
at the end of the day,
agree.
I really don't want to see the Niners in there.
At the end of the day, you're
also don't want to root for division rivals. So yeah. It's like, eh. It's like,
I mean, I'll root
like every person I know that's that's the Lions, a fan I like, besides the ones that are, trying to like show support to blowing out people's ACLs.
I will.
I'm more so pissed off at the NFL Twitter account for highlighting it twice, though.
I will always be happy to root for a tortured fan base. Being a Cubs fan and a tortured fan base, and a Bears fan and a tortured fan base.
I've never
Blackhawks
seen you root for the Vikings. What are you talking about? Long time
tortured fan base. I've rooted for the Vikings before. I was rooting for you guys in the Super Bowl against the Eagles. Or in the NFC Championship.
No, you weren't.
Game against the Eagles.
You were rooting with Will. Like,
I was probably rooting with whoever would drink with me at that moment.
I'm rooting with myself. It's a lot of fun. I'm excited about it.
It's more so because I really don't want to see Detroit win another. Like, I don't know if I want to see Detroit.
You don't want Detroit to win a Super Bowl before the Vikings do.
Yeah, that's awesome. And obviously, put the Ravens still, in it. But it's like I don't want to see the Niners win it for whatever reason, and I don't want to see Detroit win one before the Vikings. I get.
I don't have a reason to not want to see the Niners win it. Like, there's a lot of people on that team I'd be happy for if they won it.
Right, it's back and forth, but like,
there's no team left right now.
My love of Kansas City,
I don't like. There's no team left right now that I would have a problem with them winning.
With my recent love of finding KC, even though KC's gotten a lot of hate recently, it's like whoever wins the AFC game will probably be who I root for anyways. But
speaking of KC, we'll like Mahomes and Kelce, man, they've already tied Brady and Gronk.
They passed them.
They passed them. That's right. They passed them. Brady and Gronk already. Mahomes is already. Did he pass Brady or tie Brady for playoff wins already?
There's no way he's got him on playoff wins.
I think they did.
No way. Now he's won 13, which is fucking insane. But Brady's won 7 Super Bowls.
Brady won 17.
That's got to be at least 20. That's got to be at least 14 wins. 21 wins.
Yeah. A little
right
off.
There. I was
sorry.
Like, wait a minute. No, you're not even close.
No, I'm a little off. You're right. He won 13. He just passed Ben Favre.
Now
he's got 35.
He's got more wins than like some of the actual pro teams have.
He does. Mahomes
it's
pretty
stupid,
ridiculous.
Man. It's pretty bad.
Mahomes is 3 behind. So if he goes to the Super Bowl and wins, he would pass Bradshaw Elway, Steve Young, Peyton Manning.
I'll say he's got to be close to Peyton.
He's wins this week, he'll tie Peyton. He's 1 behind Peyton.
That's crazy.
And he's 27.
He's hated. He's become hated right around the same time Brady did. So he's on that trajectory right now.
Yeah.
Actually, no. I don't think Brady was hated yet. Maybe.
I think, he started to be hated around the Tuck Rule game, and then it just,
I think his hatred, I think his hatred started more, when all the cheating allegations pop up.
Spygate,
yeah. Deflategate, which I think was after Spygate.
It was. Spygate was first.
Yeah.
What's fueling Beer Fueled?
Oh, I guess we should say what we're talking about on the show in keeping with format. We're going to take a look at the 2022 NFL draft class and give you all some head coaching updates because there's been a lot of coaching hires. But first, we are drinking stuff. So it's Dynasty Check-In and Coaching Check-In, and we'll talk playoffs as well here in a little bit. But first, Ryan, why don't you kick us off? What do you got? Sorry, what IPA are you drinking?
Hey, you know what? You made me cry myself to sleep last week, so this week I decided to change it all up.
What APA do you have?
This week I am drinking an RTD.
You got an RTD.
For those of you that don't know, it's a ready-to-drink beverage.
Ready-to-drink beverage.
RTDs. I have Jack Daniels, Jack and Coke.
Those things are fucking good.
One with zero sugar.
Fucking boozy, too.
No, they're not. Those things are beautiful. I love those Coke Zero.
No, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Most of the pre-mixes are too sweet.
God, those things are so good. Those Jack and Coke Zeros. Is it the Coke Zero?
I rebounded, didn't I? I rebounded. Yeah. I'm freaking Dennis Rodman over here now.
Those things are fucking delicious.
I don't know, man. You should have got some cutthroats or some cutwaters on. See, you drink a couple of those.
We'll get those are all right.
Get the White Russians on and drink some 14% cocktail.
Next week, I'm going to bring in a different one. I saw another one. I almost grabbed that one, too. Yeah. So.
They got, peach apple and, I think, Coke.
Well, and they also have Jim Beam's got a couple. Jameson's got a couple.
RTDs are the new seltzers, so they are very popular.
They are. All right, and let's see. I'm drinking Narrow Gauge out of St. Louis, Missouri. Well, Florissant, technically. I have their ESB. So this is a British-style bitter. They're really known for their hazy IPAs and their IPAs in general. That's what Narrow Gauge is known for, but they do other stuff. They also list the grains and hops on this, which I love. So this is the Maris Otter base with flake corn, crystal malt, Carafa 2, and then acid malt. So acid malt just will help with the pH. Maize is just going to help draw back some of the malty characteristics that you would get out of the Crystal Carafa and Maris Otter. So it helps mellow that all out and give it a little bit lighter, more crisp body. So, more on this part way through the episode. Dan.
So again, I was talking with these guys off air. I was in St. Louis for most of the week for work, and I blanked on getting St. Louis beer, but thankfully Hopper had my back and got some Narrow Gauge. So I decided to bring on a Springfield. They're not hyper local to Springfield, but it's definitely a Springfield local favorite. That's Hand of Fate.
Good boy.
And this is, I haven't had them on in a long time. It's been a long time since they've been on the show. Huge fan of them. Huge fan of Mike, which is the owner and the brewmaster.
Oh, great dude.
Great dude. Fantastic. We used to do contract brewing for two of their other beers, but I'm drinking Juicy as we mock Ryan for drinking IPAs. I brought on one of my favorite APAs.
Yeah, APA. Sorry.
This is Juicy. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Mike does not have the ingredients listed, but generally between this and Loopy for Loopian, you're gonna get juicy citrusness, all the classics of a juice forward. A pale ale.
I heard you were drinking Juicy, and my mind immediately went to, I want some Loopy.
Yeah, same here. That is, I think Juicy is super underrated for brand of fate beers, but Loopy for Loopian is still one of my favorites. Still one of the first bombers I ever bought.
Dariata too. Bombers, is yeah. Really.
I
underrated.
Almost got that. I was close, and I'm dealing with heartburn, and yet I make the mistake and buy a IPA, which obviously hops in the acidity from it all. It doesn't help, but I would have been fucked either way, whichever beer I would have picked. So,
yeah. And if it really known for their, I don't want to say known for, because Mike would probably beat me over the head with a frying pan, but it is what they're known for, is their cream ales that get.
Thanks to me and Benny's and my time there and me as a buyer. Yeah. I kept Mike up many of nights having to make large quantities of batches of cream ale.
They just have different things thrown into it, and they sell like hotcakes because they have a really good cream ale. Which, by the way, you know, listen, that's Prince recipe. that Mike has.
Yeah, but... I know.
Anyway, which means that I also have that recipe. I don't use it. I retired that one. I actually have a different Green Mountain recipe I prefer. But
that's fine. There's other breweries to try to buy it off of the
right
off of the coffee light beer craze from a different brewery.
Like,
I'm not going to mention names.
And one in St. Louis that has their own double bean that I might have a sixer of in my fridge.
I say that may have been out longer than
Schlafly
Mike,
Schlafly was the first one.
Yeah, there. But this is a hyper local Springfield brewery.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
Anyways,
well, let's get into the coaching cycle. More on these about halfway through. We'll start off with just the most recent Falcons hired former Ravens defense. Or good lord, I can't talk.
Jesus,
give me a second.
Struggle. Timey wimey, go backwards.
Timey wimey.
All right, let's get into some of the coaching carousel stuff. The Falcons have hired former Rams defensive coordinator Raheem Morris. Hey, I got it that time. Two takes.
Good job.
So Raheem Morris had the interim tag for them at one point. Was that? Raheem Morris recently had an interim tag somewhere where he should have been able to.
I thought it was Houston.
Right?
I thought it was Houston.
I read somewhere that, and I don't remember this for sure.
I'm gonna look.
No,
it sounds. That sounds right.
2020 was Atlanta. He was 4-7 with an interim tag in 2020. That would have been after they fired. Let's see,
Dan Quinn.
Yep.
Yeah, I just looked it up.
After 0-5. So Raheem Morris comes in to coach them. Defensive-minded head coach is actually, that's interesting. Curious to see what they do at OC. There are some good offensive coordinators out there still that are available. I'm curious to see how they bring that in. And then, you know, all eyes on them for what they do in the draft. I don't have a problem with them bringing in a defensive-minded head coach that does have previous head coaching experience. Particularly 3 years with Tampa, 2009 through 2011, one winning season. But yeah, I don't have an issue with that piece. I think that they were fine, whatever side of the ball they went with here, but they got to figure the quarterback situation out.
I think they should have gone on the offensive side. Just given the pieces, the young core pieces they have to build around, London, Pittsburgh, and Bijan. You know, having good ancillary, you know, pieces with guys like Jonnu Smith and Tyler Allgeier to help, you know, solidify the playmakers and the offensive side of the ball. That would have been a better choice for them to bring in maybe some, you know, one of these, younger OCs that have more of a progressive play calling in mind to help, you know, win this very winnable division. But I like Morris. I do. So, I mean, it's a fine move. It's just with their offensive pieces, I thought it would have been a better choice.
Well, but you also got to remember, too, this is a, you know, it's a lifer NFL coach. And with the offensive coordinator cycle, I mean, Kellen Moore and Cliff Kingsbury are still circulating as far as available OCs. So, I mean.
But did Morgan fired?
He didn't get Kellen fired. Moore? There's a lot of requests to interview for him, though. The Browns and the Eagles have both requested interviews with him. So
when we get to their notes, I'm sure.
He's not been fired, but he is entertaining interview requests. So
it makes sense given the Chargers' recent head coach hire. So
yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. But like you said, but you know, there are the Eagles just fired Brian Johnson. So there are offensive coordinators out there. For the grabbing, essentially, that you could supplement this with.
And the head coaching jobs are just starting to shrink up now.
Only two left.
Two left. Yes.
Yep. The Commanders and the Seahawks are the two remaining vacancies. Anything else?
Mike, you just.
Okay.
Oh, wow. So here's news. New Falcons head coach. This is from around the NFL on Twitter. New Falcons head coach Raheem Morris and general manager Terry Fontenot. I know I can't say his name right.
Fontenot.
Welcome to my world.
Will report directly to owner Arthur Blank.
Duh. Blank's just trying to get a championship. That's why I was a little surprised they didn't bring Belichick, but I'm also happy they didn't bring him in because I think Belly's done. So
I think he is too. And
I don't think he should be coach anymore.
And it's been reported that the Seahawks and the Commanders aren't interested. So it sounds like he won't be this upcoming season.
Maybe he'll be a DC. Like maybe he'll just like he'll be brought in as probably like a consultant with it. You know,
assistant
like
head
Pete
coach.
Carroll. Yeah. Yeah.
Go to Green Bay.
Well, like, yeah.
That's true. They did just fire Joe Barry.
Yeah. Oh God. Trash.
Yeah. All right, Panthers. This one's a good hire. I like this one. The Panthers have hired former Bucs offensive coordinator Dave Canales as head coach and former linebacker Dan Morgan to be their GM. He was the assistant GM for the last 3 years after spending time in Buffalo's front office. So a couple things here. We'll talk about this in two sections. First off, the head coaching hire. I think this is a great head coaching hire. Canales was in Seattle for the resurgence of Geno Smith. He's now been in Tampa Bay to put together a career resurgence for Baker that's going to lead to a big contract as they, had a hell of a season, better than anybody expected. And you're bringing him in to work with Bryce Young, who the Panthers kind of desperately need to work out. I like this hire for them. I think it's the right call to give Young the best chance to develop with a guy that is resurrected two quarterback careers now.
Yeah, this is going to be all over him too.
What was that right?
And the girls will be all over him too because he was like, so cute.
He's a very pretty man.
Yes,
McVay is going to be jealous.
Bay O'Connell's
Mike McDaniel,
Fansky. Yeah,
he's McDaniel. East Coast McVay.
He is. He's got the chiseled jawline. Model look like he got hit in the face with the right jeans, so
he did. Now, the flip side of this is that I don't like them bringing in a GM that has been part of their front office for the last 3 years, i.e., their assistant GM, i.e., part of the problem.
Yeah,
that could make sense.
I can see this being a flat out, this is almost like a bridge hire. Like, yeah. I know Dave, like, he deserves a shot. But this feels such like a let's bring in a guy that can maybe help, you know, further along Bryce Young. And the team has got so many issues beyond what just one coach can change. And he'll probably last maybe 2 years. And the hope is that he helps Bryce Young develop more. And then he's back to being OC. That's my prediction. Just because the Panthers are in such, you know, disarray, the GM is it. Or, you know, the owner is such a piece of shit and you are seeding bleeding over, as you mentioned, Hopper, of the old GM regime. So
yeah,
he's got an uphill battle. And
oh, big time. And they have no first round
pick. I commend. Yeah. Yeah. And they have no first round pick on one of the league's worst rosters. It's woof, man.
Yeah.
Woof.
Yeah. I've had better.
Yep. This is why it's big on Canales, right? Because they don't have that first round pick. They got to make something work with what they got. And to his credit, he's gotten a lot out of particularly that Seattle offense, but a lot out of his quarterbacks. So we'll see.
We'll see.
All right. Bears hired offensive coordinator Shane Waldron.
How do you feel about that, Hopper?
I mean, based on his delivery, he sounds super cheerful. That's for sure.
This is so boring.
Yeah.
Looking at his profile, there are bright spots. There are also things that are mediocre to bad. And, you know, it's not. I think a lot of Bears fans were hoping that, you know, they either went Cliff or. They went, or maybe this was just me. They went Cliff or Roman because that would tip your hand into which direction the team was gonna head quarterback wise and head with everything. Going with Waldron doesn't really move that needle. I think it's an upgrade from Getsy, but it's marginal. And the other problem I have here as well is that if you're assuming, and you should be, that Luce is a hot seat head coach going into the season, a lot like Sirianni and some other guys are going to be, and the Bears start slow, you're immediately in a situation where the Bears are just going to repeat the same cycle they did with Trubisky, the same if they don't move on from Fields this offseason. If they do move on from Fields this offseason, Yes, if they do move on from Fields this offseason, you're in a situation where you're essentially repeating the same damn thing that you did with Trubisky, that you did with, you know, now with Fields, right? It's, we're going to bring you in with a lame duck coaching staff, and the lame duck coaching staff is going to get fired. Then we're going to hire another guy and bring that in. You're going to get 2 years of that. And then your fourth year, we're going to, you're going to be under somebody else, and you've got three offensive coordinators in 4 years, and you're not set up to succeed. And it feels a lot like that's where this heads also. You know, if the defense plays like they did down the stretch, and I think Waldron's a guy who can make the offense good enough, then you got a playoff team, but this just didn't move the needle the way that I wanted it to.
Well, we're going to see on who is the biggest benefactor to Geno's success. You have two Seattle-based assistant coaches, OCs, and QB coach to both Geno, who both now have recent head coaching jobs. Now, we'll see what this makes of. Now, obviously, Shane's got a better roster to work with than, you know, compared to Dave with the Panthers, and a hell of a lot more, you know, draft capital, you know, currency to really upgrade the team, to help upgrade the team if they go in that direction. It's just,
yeah. And I mean,
I agree. It's kind of bland, but sometimes this is what this team may need is some hopefully consistencies and guys that's showing recent success with the resurgence of the Seattle offense behind Geno Smith post Russell Wilson departure. So,
yeah. And I mean, he was a coordinator for the Rams before going to Seattle. So he's off the McVay coaching tree. So, I mean, that's a plus, right? I mean, that coaching tree has been successful. It's been fruitful. He was their passing game coordinator for 2017 all the way up through 2020. So, I mean, look, I don't know that plays with Fields nicely, but if they do get Caleb Williams, then you can make an argument because he did get a good amount out of Jared Goff, right? And out of Stafford.
And out of Geno.
Absolutely.
And out of Geno. So, you know, I'll leave it at that. I mean, Goff had 32 touchdowns and 4,600 yards with him as the pass game coordinator.
You can also credit that to McVay. I mean,
to McVay, yes, but
there's obviously a lot of intertwining here. But
yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how the sum of the Bears parts comes together. Let's put it that way. They had a chance to move the needle with the OC, and I don't think this did it. Bengals promoted quarterback coach Dan Pitchard, offensive coordinator. This changes nothing. It's exactly like Zach Taylor is a lot like his predecessor, right? You just like McVay does over there and with the Rams, all you do is you turn your offensive coordinators into head coaches, you promote your quarterback's coach, and next year your quarterback coach gets sniped to be an OC, and you keep rolling quarterback coaches up and out.
That's because teams want to chase the next big thing on offense. That's why they develop coaching trees all of a sudden.
Yep, and that's how this is gone.
Yep.
The next Jared Mayo.
Jaguars make
Gerard
a meh.
Mayo.
Gerard Mayo. Jaguars hired made a meh hire, bringing in former Falcons defensive coordinator Ryan Nielsen to the same position.
Atlanta's been okay defensively, haven't they?
They're okay.
And I don't know. Maybe
they've been okay.
It's not a splashy move because it's defense. I mean, people don't.
Well, there is a splashy defensive move we'll get to later.
Well, I know. Not so much when we talk offense.
Is there anything else on Atlanta or no? Like offensive coordinator wise?
No.
So there's a talk of like Zach Robinson following Raheem Morris?
Not yet.
They got to make a splashy move at the OC.
The Morris hire just happened today. So
maybe that'll be Cliff. Maybe Cliff can be tethered to whoever Atlanta. I now have tipped my skills to Atlanta drafting a quarterback.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think they're not going to sit it.
Yeah. I mean, with the Belichick news, I was very firmly on the veteran QB route or making a splash move there.
I guarantee you the Bears are paying attention to that.
They're not staying at eight.
Yeah.
Atlanta's moving up.
They're going to move up. And if the Bears decide to roll with Fields and punt it one more time, then, you know.
Yeah.
Or they could trade for Fields. You're right.
I've seen hypothetical trades so far.
Yeah, I've actually seen, the
Vikings.
Trades.
I saw hypothetical Vikings trade up to the 101.
Yeah.
That didn't look actually
Atlanta
too costly.
Trades for Fields and the Bears have three first-round picks in the top 10. That's franchise-altering, right?
Oh, big
time. If you get the picks right, yeah.
Yeah.
They could solidify that offensive line.
I mean, look at the Rams and Washington trade back in the RG3 deal. Like, when you go back and look at the names, you're like, boy, that was just...
Yeah, but
swing and misses across the board.
And then you flip that over.
Like the Dolphins, yeah.
But then you flip it over and you look at the Lions trade of Stafford and what they turned that into, right?
That's the most win-win trade ever.
For both teams, yeah.
For both teams. Doesn't matter what Detroit does at this point. That's the most win-win move.
It is.
Ever.
The Raiders actually didn't fuck this one up and hired Antonio Pierce.
They actually listened
surprisingly.
To Crosby and the team and kept a likable interim coach.
Yeah.
We'll see if that results in anything because it's not like player coaches are always successful.
Well, because the Raiders are still the Raiders, they did go out and hire former Chargers GM Tom Telesco, and they're interviewing Luke Getsy for their offensive coordinator position.
So. Oh, my God. Who wins? I guess it's a win for Zamir White if they get Getsy. If you weren't
part of the team when they're 8-9, I'm don't jump on the bag going next year when they're 8-9.
I don't know if I even want Pierce there. He doesn't deserve the fucking shit show that is the Raiders. They haven't been the same since the fucking 70s when they were actually winning, you know, fucking championships.
And Zamir White is who wins, by the way. As long as he can
catch screens. That's what I jokingly made.
As long as he
can
catch screens, you're fine if that's what they're at.
Yeah. It's, no wonder Davante Adams wants out. Or wants them to bring in a veteran QB I won't name.
Well, that could be. Chargers hired Jim Harbaugh. 5-year deal. No money disclosed yet, but a 5-year deal for Harbaugh with the Chargers.
There's so much Chargers fans are acting like they just won the fucking Super Bowl.
Yeah, so, I was kind of irritated.
Harbaugh's
about it.
Harbaugh's got a ridiculous track record during his time in the NFL, but
yeah, no, this is good.
It's like, yeah, I mean, this is great for Chargers because it's gonna hopefully get him out of the shadow of the Rams.
Yeah,
and in LA, he has absolutely. Probably the best quarterback he's had
in his NFL level.
Yeah, easily. Yeah,
and
also coming out of the shadow of the basement.
Yeah.
Maybe Herbert can actually have some, you know, maybe he can win a playoff game for once.
This is good.
Herbert. And
now it's all eyes on personnel. What do they do with coordinators, et cetera, et cetera. So good hire. Don't need to break it down a whole lot. And this one absolutely moves the needle, and we'll see what they do through the offseason.
I want to know how much influence Harbaugh is going to have, like how they draft and who he brings on for his staff. Like,
and who he lets go.
That's right. Yeah. Like, that's not just say like a move where the GM gets everything. Like, there's Harbaugh is gonna almost be the fucking GM of that team. He's almost on Belichick level in terms of what type of just the amount of influence he's gonna have in the draft room.
Like, could you imagine just like Austin Eckler? Like, yeah, we're just gonna have to let you go.
He's gonna trade Herbert for a pick, or he's gonna trade Herbert to Atlanta for their pick and draft JJ McCarthy. Oh yeah!
Actually,
I saw that floating around. Axe. I had a good laugh at that one.
Just draft JJ McCarthy in the later rounds. That way, you have a better backup instead of Easton Stick.
He's going first round.
Fuck your Easton Stick slander.
You're gonna laugh when McCarthy goes first round.
Defensive coordinator splash. Eagles hiring former Dolphins defensive coordinator Vic Fangio, who was able to get himself away from the Dolphins through a mutual separation once the Eagles offered him a deal.
Ooh,
this is good.
Most epic collapse of a team. Yeah, it's got to be better than was it Ben Johnson? Not Ben Johnson. Who was their?
Don't use Ben Johnson's name in vain.
Brian Johnson was the OC.
Brian Johnson. Yeah, I don't remember
So Sean Desai, actually, this is funny. So Sean Desai was the defensive coordinator, and Matt Patricia was the assistant on defense. And that took over play calling from Desai. Desai is actually a Fangio disciple. when the Bears got rid of Fangio, Desai promoted their DC. So now Fangio is coming in following Desai, which should be an easy transition because it's damn near the same defense, but you're getting the master of it in there this time. There you go.
Yeah. We'll see if that that pays off.
Master.
Titans hired Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan as their head coach. So, again, just we're going to keep rolling people off these coaching trees.
Yeah, so, I didn't Callahan's see that one coming. I don't think anyone did.
No.
Are we going to get 1 year of Levis?
Probably.
You think Tennessee? You think Tennessee? Like, they're what? They're pick six?
Seven. They have pick seven.
Seven?
Yeah.
I think we'll commit to Levis.
I mean,
yeah, they shouldn't, keep
but... He played well enough. I think they'll commit to him in a bridge fashion anyway.
Yeah, you can't Jazz Rose him yet.
Yeah, you can. In one good game.
You're right.
He's basically higher draft capital Sam Howell. I'm sorry. That's well, and I guess, you know, with the bigger arm, but just as dumb.
Yep. I don't have a lot of thoughts on this. Bengals will obviously have a lot of success on offense. Titans obviously have a decrepit roster. So
they're going to look different now. It's not going to be running the ball through Derrick Henry no more.
That's for sure.
Must be running through Tajay Spears.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
with his no knees.
Unfortunately, Callahan's here for a rebuild, essentially.
Yeah. He's probably also in the line of good old Dave in Carolina as a bridge coach.
Yeah.
To get through the worst years.
Yep. Packers will not return defensive coordinator Joe Barry. The Eagles fired offensive coordinator Brian Johnson. They've interviewed Kellen Moore and Cliff Kingsbury for that vacancy.
Thank fucking God. Boy, you'd think the Bears offense was bad with their play calling. The Eagles
collapsed
down
the stretch.
That's what I'm saying. That was fucking horrible.
The Eagles had no damn intermediate game at all. No.
They had literally nothing. It was the most vanilla play calling ever. It was very frustrating to watch.
They had nothing intermediate. They didn't involve the run game. It was, ugh. So, can't be much of a downgrade on any front.
See you later.
Yeah, bye. Bill Belichick viewed as a long shot for Commanders or Seahawks vacancies. We talked about that. Saints fired former Steelers quarterback coach Mike Sullivan to their offensive coordinator vacancy.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Mediocre team stay mediocre?
Yeah, that feels like such a why hire. He's done nothing to help develop any of the quarterbacks in Pittsburgh.
No, Pickett's been terrible. Rudolph was fine. Like, Trubisky's been terrible. Like, I don't know how this worked out, but apparently it did.
Maybe it was because of cheap money, because the Saints have no fucking cap room, even though we all know coaches don't apply to the salary cap.
Yeah. The Browns interviewed Kellen Moore for their offensive coordinator position. Please don't go there, Kellen Moore.
No, please don't.
And we already talked about the Raiders sucking. All right, news. A couple quick items here. Kayshon Boutte arrested for illegal betting activity. He placed 8,900 bets while underage at LSU.
I read the article, a brief article on this. He used his mom's account, used his mom's credit card. And he would bet on himself in college because this dates back to his time in school. Like, he bet on himself to be successful. It's like, oh boy.
And underage.
Oh boy. Yeah.
So
he sat bet a couple years ago then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because his final year, he just got horrible.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, he had his one Debbie breakout year, his freshman year, and then that was kind of it. He got hurt and then
it choked ever since.
And then he just got forgotten about after, I think forgot who was after him, but yeah, it was pretty rough.
Pretty bad.
Neighbors was after him.
Was it Neighbor? It was Neighbors. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And then Trevor Lawrence and Trent Baalke will allegedly have a heart-to-heart about whether a long-term extension will happen now or in 2020.
Wow. Trent Baalke, GOAT GM. GOAT. Very sarcastic. He's the reason why Jim Harbaugh isn't in San Francisco anymore.
Trent Baalke is pretty terrible.
Fucking trash.
Straight trash. And, I mean, this is potentially going to alienate Lawrence too, depending on how it goes. Because they're not.
I hope he fucking leaves.
They're not going to sign him. They're not going to sign him this offseason.
They're going to give him some bridge deal, and it's just going to be just a slap in the face. I hope.
Oh yeah, like Here's a middle finger for you.
I hope he draws out two franchise tags and then he leaves Jacksonville and Jacksonville gets nothing in return.
Yeah.
They won't happen. Too much team control over players. It's their first 7 years as first round picks in the NFL. But Lawrence deserves better than this.
He does. All right. I'm going to do a beer review because I'm slamming this and I want another one for the rest of the show.
Boom. Let's go.
Beer review.
All right, Ryan, why don't you start with your RTD?
All right, so I had the Jack Daniel's Coca-Cola Zero. Comes in at a solid 7%. And knowing how I usually like my Jack Daniel's and Coke, it's usually very strong, more heavier on the Jack Daniel's and more with the Coke just for color. But for this, it's actually very, like, I was expecting, like, a bitter hit of, like, sweetness, and it wasn't. It was actually very mellow. It's almost, it's actually enjoyable to where you don't have that, like, if you're a whiskey drinker, you sometimes like strong whiskey. This one's kind of like a blend of, like, it's light, it's refreshing, it's easy to drink. It's nothing you're going to get hammered off, like, one can. So,
yeah,
to me, I actually surprisingly like it.
I love those things. I could get hammered off of a couple cans of this.
I don't think. I could probably finish the whole four-pack and be like, all right, let's go.
Let's go watch Motley Crue.
Let's go watch Motley Crue, guys.
Man.
All right, I'm drinking Narrow Gauges ESB, and ESB is a very broad style, but this one is very, very drinkable. It's got good supporting, like, breadiness. It's got a really, really, really subtle sweetness. It's really, really crisp. Good, just kind of like classic, earthy, somewhat spicy British hops. Drying, bitter on the back end, but not IPA bitter, but enough that just makes you want to come back and keep slamming it. It's an incredible beer. They did a great job with this.
And I am drinking Hand of Fate's Juicy. This is a Juicy APA or Juicy American Pale Ale. I absolutely love this beer. I'm drinking it relatively slow because, you know, when you're drinking high acidic beers, I'm dealing with heartburn. Not the brightest of decisions to make. This is a very good on this type of classic style. It's not overly juice forward or acidic as you would get, you know, with your traditional double dry hop hazies. But you get a lot of the citrus horse notes. You get a lot of, like, you know, your stone fruit, your pineapple, your grapefruit, and stuff like that. So if you ever are in the downstate area of Springfield or of Illinois, and you get a chance to pick up some Hand of Fate, I highly recommend doing so. And if you like IPAs, pick this one up.
I'm going to have to do that. Yes. Coming on down.
Coming on down.
All right, now my mic is on. There we go.
I was like, uh-oh, here we go. We're about ready to lose the video.
Nah, you're good. My mic was off. We're fine. Internet's been behaving for the last little bit. All right, let's talk playoffs. Quick recap of last week. Ravens blew out the Texans. We kind of presumed this is where this was headed, that it was a good run, but this is where it ended, and it ended it. So Texans got a lot to be proud of. They got a lot to build on. A lot of good performances. A lot of guys took the next step. Hell of a job by Coach Ryan, and yo, I may not like the infrastructure around the Texans and have a lot of issues, things that have happened there in the past, but the on-field product is good, and I'm excited to see what they do and how they build on that.
So,
and their first half game was a lot better than it looked, too, between the two teams. It was just that Baltimore adjusted better in the second half and just dominated.
It was so obvious. It was like, it was literally watching
just
how a competent team, how coach, how literally everything. It was just like, oh, fine, you're gonna blitz on every down, and we're struggling to protect Lamar. We're gonna do, you know, quick runs, quick reads, everything kept in close. And Houston never got past Baltimore's 27. They never even got to the red zone. Like, it was, it was just
crazy.
A masterful adjustment. And
You know what? This is good for Houston, fun game to watch, because this is how those players and those young players on that team get better, get to the next level, learn from it. I mean, there's a lot of cliches that go with this, but you need to get your ass whipped like this to take the next step in development.
Yep. 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 Yep.
49ers edge out the Packers. I got to talk nice about Green Bay. Nobody gave him a shot to get this far. And all Jordan Love did is prove that Green Bay, once again, has a quarterback. Now, maybe not elite level. Yeah, a lot of wide open receivers, et cetera, et cetera. They've got a lot of nice pieces at wide receiver with Bo Melton and Dontavian Wicks and Jaden Reed, to build with, that can develop into something. It was a team that played better than some of its parts, and they pushed the 49ers to the brink, who are a very, very good football team. All credit to Green Bay on this one. They've also got a lot to build on with a very young offense.
Everyone was wrong. And I hate people trying to double back on Jordan Love. Dude,
everyone was wrong. No one was
wrong. There wasn't a fucking Matt LaFleur wasn't, like, in preseason, wasn't even sure of Love through some of his press conferences. Like, he stepped up. People also forget the massive kind of downtrod he had in the midseason, but the way that he ended his season, the way that he ended the postseason was, he was great. He's going to still have his issues and his problems as as an accurate passer and sometimes decision maker, but I agree. He's probably not going to be elite, but he's going to be there through at least one contract. He'll get his contract extension. I am very interested to see what this looks like. Do you give him more than a 4-year deal? Probably not, he's definitely earned more than a bridge deal.
He has. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because he has earned more than a bridge deal. He's earned a bit of commitment here. And those young receivers, every time they're asked to do something, they did it. It was a complete, other than Christian Watson, who's nowhere to be found because he's been hurt most of the season. But those other young receivers, after years of the Packers being maligned for not being able to hit on receivers, these guys played. Like, they showed that they belong and that they've got something.
It's they got a bright future and a very,
and
I won't say wide open, because this should be Detroit's division for at least a couple years, but they're gonna be competitive.
Nope. And if the
wildcard spots,
if the Packers develop and the Bears can develop and the Vikings can retool a little bit on the fly, the NFC North is about to be really fun.
The NFC North will be the one to win for the NFC.
For the NFC, hopefully. Yeah. No one wants it to be the East, so it's fine.
No.
And the Eagles are really, really close to aging out, particularly on defense and their offensive line. So there's that.
Yeah.
In the East. For the Niners, I mean, look, they were expected to win this game. It was close. They put up 27 points. It was a decent performance for them. I don't got a lot to say there. They did what they were supposed to do.
They're going to have to look better next week, or on Sunday if they're going to win, though.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah, they're going to have to win that game.
Lions over the Buccaneers. This one was close until it wasn't. Lions pulling away a bit late. Good run for Baker. Good run for the Bucs. Good retool on the fly. Baker's obviously earned himself a starting role going forward, and to see what happens around that. And for the Lions, the dream continues.
Again, it keeps on going.
That's like Energizer
Bunny.
That's right. Yep. And, we'll talk about them versus 49ers in a minute. And Chiefs over the Bills in the latest installment of their rivalry. Difference was Tyler Bass going wide right. Jason Kelsey's a fucking machine. Jason.
Legend.
Not Travis. Absolute legend. But Chiefs-Bills is fun. It is the modern day Patriots Colts, but it's just, for me, it just feels like it's way more fun than what that was.
My one caveat to this is that I always felt like you're going to get it from Indy you know, back when we got the Indy and in New England, you know, Brady versus Manning, you know, I think I was always very clear that Manning was a better overall talented quarterback. Allen's amazing, but this was his opportunity. This was arguably the worst Chiefs, easily the worst Chiefs roster, especially offense that Mahomes has been a part of at home.
Yeah, man.
It was just like, and they have their own issues. They have their own roster construction, salary cap issues, and an aging Diggs. And
Diggs fell off a cliff at the end of the year. He hasn't had and I think that was a big difference. And, you know, we know, like, it's no secret they wanted to go receiver, and then they got
or straight in front of them
and had to go with Kincaid, and that didn't play out. And they kind of retooled to run more through James Cook, and, you know, both of those teams were not perfect right now. It was Allen's chance, yes, but for the second time, it was Tyler Bass that didn't pay off, not Josh Allen. Josh Allen puts him in position to win. He can't go kick the field goal.
Yeah, yeah. I also would argue that the two plays prior to that, when Allen made the poor decision and not kept the drive going, he went for it all. And, dude, there's still time. Like, you can't just take, the shots he took. I would argue his decision-making was a little up and down at the end of the drive, on that last drive. And Bass had proven to be struggling, plus weather.
I'm
not trying to make excuses for Bass. Bass is supposed to make that kick.
Bass is a good kicker, too. Yeah.
I'm not going to absolve Allen of all this and place all the blame on Bass.
No.
What we've been hearing about with him getting death threats and shit, which
it's got to
be better. Come on.
I mean, did you guys see how the wind was blowing there in that stadium? I mean, it was just going all over the place.
Yeah. It's very, you know, frustrating to watch the underneath throws there.
Yeah.
You know, for them to get the first down and to keep the game going. And it's like, this is why Brady was so successful for so long. He took what was given to him and then made you pay.
And
that's something that Allen's going to have to learn, and something he's struggled with.
That's the live or die by Josh Allen. Restrictions, right?
Yeah.
You know, look, I can only hope, and we should be, that we're lucky enough to watch these two way more.
Oh, I cannot wait to keep seeing that. And then you're going to healthy Burrow, Jackson, the emergence of Stroud. We'll see what happens with Herbert. And
the AFC's loaded, but Allen and Mahomes again, just that's.
Yeah.
Both teams imperfect, not nearly as good as they've been the last couple seasons, but another good installment.
This is the issue of not hitting on your draft picks.
Yes.
Starting to come back up to them.
For both of them.
Both of them. Yeah.
Yep. Lions Niners this week. Look, I want the Lions to win this. I look at Lions Niners and Ravens Chiefs, and I have a hard time thinking that logo conspiracy is not dangerously close to becoming true. We'll start with Ravens Chiefs, and we'll get the Lions. The Ravens are a more complete team. I mean, you have Patrick Mahomes, you have Andy Reid, you've got the experience of the Chiefs. They've got a good defense. They'll adjust. They're not going to get out coached, but the Ravens are a more complete team all around. And the Chiefs have been flawed, and they've been flawed all season. And I have a hard time thinking that those flaws are not going to come bite them here.
These storylines that are coming out about this, something, you know, to note, Ravens are only 3.5-point favorites, which is fucking shocking to me.
Yeah, I don't get that one either.
3.5.
I'm like, what?
At home, and have been the best team in the NFL for 2 months, easily. Blew out the Niners on national television. Blew out Miami on the road. Like, they are clearly the best team in football.
They blew out all three of these teams, actually, this year.
And to not get the respect of just 3.5-point favorites, which is, I'll be interested to see how the Lions move throughout the week. One note I saw, because people are diving hard into this game, is who the NFL hired as the referee staff for this. And it's very telling, because the team that they hired historically has favored a lot of their penalties drawn and given to the road team. There's a lot of people up in arms about this. It's obviously, you know, conspiracy ads being put on and shit, but
yeah.
The painted narratives of everything in like, and you know, people have now looked into the referee crew that's now taking on this team. And it's just been, you know, from what we got from the Chiefs Bills and having the you know, and favoring ref for Mahomes, even though Mahomes is just good. It's just, I find it hilarious that if the Chiefs pull this out, it's going to be fucking all the same shit again.
NFL and then all obviously love a good all the conspiracy old white, and love yeah. the bitch,
and they love the hate on Swift. I like there's like I'm rooting for the Ravens, but I really hope that Swift goes to the Super Bowl and just
I do too because I want people to be pissed off because why are you hating on her? It's not her fucking fault. She's just
hating on her, but
she's not even trying to be highlighted.
She's just
yeah, it's
hanging
like,
out in the suite, supporting her guy, not doing a damn thing, and you're
she's hanging
off.
Out with all their friends and family. Like
I don't get it.
You're mad because she's her.
Yeah, so it's her, and they hate her. But if it's Jason Kelce doing it, they love it. I'm like, what's the difference?
There's not.
Because he has a podcast?
He's actually being more performative than Taylor's been the entire time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He took his shirt off and jumped off from his suite. Yeah, he's definitely
he's not jumping out of the suite. Taylor's not jumping out of the suite topless chugging beers, but...
No. She's not spinning her shirt, you know, around like a helicopter. That's not what she's doing.
Right,
no,
taking bowling ball shots with Bill's Mafia. She's showing up to support T-Rav.
Yeah. It's and the media who's pushing it more. So it's like, get over yourself, people.
Get over it, guys.
It's nothing.
They do.
You're that threatened by her, and I don't understand it.
No. Yeah, I don't get it either. Like, oh my God, I can't stand seeing this. I'm like, why?
Yo, that 10-second clip really ruined your experience, huh?
Yeah, my day's ruined now. This game over
seconds
yet?
They showed her in the press box. Good Lord. God forbid.
Oh, well, Travis made a heart sign. Must be for Taylor.
That or the people that were idiots. Like, he's mocking DeMar Hamlin. Like, yeah, guys, Taylor Swift has been doing the damn hand heart for, good Lord, over a decade
ever?
Now. Yeah.
Yep.
Longer than you have known who DeMar Hamlin is. So, I saw that shit.
That is 100% a fact.
Yeah. Lions, Niners. I don't want to say it. Dan, you say it.
Niners, 7-point favorites. More shocking than the Ravens being 3.5 at home.
So, it depends what site you go to, because on DraftKings, they have the Ravens by 4.
I mean, that's now, though. I'm reading off what the opening lines. Like, I read off... These are what the lines were after the games were played on Sunday.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Obviously, you're going to get some shits. Obviously, different sites are going to pull from different books. So you're going to have different opening lines for them either way. But still, you're not going to see much more than 0.5 in any direction. But the Niners being a full touchdown favorite, which they haven't looked the same since the blowout loss to Baltimore. Ryan... Yeah. We know where you land on this. You want Detroit.
Tell us why.
I want Detroit.
Tell me why I'm wrong for thinking this is going to go the other way.
I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong if it goes the other way. I mean, I can see it also going that way too. But just based on what I saw last week and just how Green Bay was basically handling, and as with Deebo Samuel, and that's going to be the huge factor here. I think is Deebo Samuel if he does play or not, because when he plays,
no fracture.
Is freaking.
Just well, I forgot to talk about that. No fracture or anything like that in his shoulder.
And he came back limited practice today.
Yep.
Well,
he
Thursday. He
practice all week. He knows the offense. He's been in it for long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't need the practice.
I think when he's out, I think they're 1-4 without him.
Yeah.
Well, he's a very
always,
important piece of the offense.
He is. They've always been worse without him. So.
I mean, if the Lions could quit playing zone defense because the zone defense is not working. I don't know how, like, that's the only thing you're going to be able to, you have to stop them. I'm like, that pass rush is going to have to run through them.
And I think,
or have to stop McCaffrey.
And I think that's the difference is going to be the defensive side of the ball.
You got to get someone other than Hutchinson that can get to Brock and make it
uncomfortable. Hard. And you've got to be able to play. Yeah.
And you got to take advantage of,
you got to be able to take away McCaffrey too.
Yeah.
Yes, and absolutely.
It's not like the Niners cannot, you know, go through their lulls themselves. They can go through bad play call stretches. They can kind of lean a little harder into very stagnant play calling. So Detroit's just going to have to, they're just going to have to play within their own game. I think their biggest obstacle is going to be just their, is the inexperience in these moments too. Yeah. They play with so much emotion. You can see it's going to go in both directions, and it's going to see how do they respond if they go down by more than a touchdown.
Yeah. Now Goff has experience in these situations. He does deep playoff runs. That's a bonus.
He's back in California.
They've got a lot of talent. But you know, I think we're getting a Niners Ravens Super Bowl.
I don't think the NFL wants to handle a Detroit and Baltimore based Super Bowl.
I don't think so either.
I want it just for the narrative of just, oh, okay. Don't worry, these whitewashed blue collar teams.
Right.
Or not blue collar. None of these whitewashed Richie folk fucking teams. We're getting blue collared in this bitch.
Yeah.
Detroit and Baltimore.
Yep.
Yeah, we don't want your assembly line workers of the automotive field out here.
Yeah, that's right.
We don't like your can.
Draft recap.
All right, let's go ahead and start with the quarterbacks. The best quarterback in this draft class was the very last pick of the draft. That's about all you need to know.
That's such a bad. I mean, it was already considered a bad draft class. Thank God for Purdy to show something from it. God, is it bad?
Yeah. For a reminder, Kenny Pickett was the only first round quarterback in this class. He's been replaced by Mason Rudolph at this point, for all intents and purposes. Desmond Ridder saw some starts and didn't pan out, never really was supposed to. He was the 74th pick overall, so third round. He didn't even have a second round quarterback. Malik Willis never panned out. He was the hyper-athletic, raw talent. Matt Corral, nothing. Bailey Zappi's been fine. Looks like he'll hang around. Is a backup. Sam Howell flamed out as a starter. We got one Skylar Thompson start that was atrocious. And then Brock Purdy's playing in the NFC Championship game again.
Just like we all expected.
Like we all drew up.
All right,
that's the 22 class in a nutshell.
Yeah, Brock Purdy's the only one worth anything, and you're holding him right now. So there you go. The running back class, you could also make an argument that the most productive running back was also the last running back drafted. Breece Hall injuries. Pacheco was number 251 overall. But Breece Hall.
Yeah, it'd be him. It's Breece.
Breece is the best one in the class. He was the first one drafted. He had the injury. That's why you could argue Pacheco as of late, and he's been on some atrocious Jets teams. Breece Hall is a top five dynasty back right now.
He's a top three.
He might be the top one.
He would be my one. If I cared enough to do rankings, it would be him.
Yeah.
In a tier of three, but
he's been good. He'll benefit from Rodgers being back and that offense being better next season. Yeah, obviously hamstrung a bit by that this year. Incredibly talented. ACL injury is why we're not talking about him in a different light. Kenneth Walker. Good rookie season, sophomore season.
Availability.
Yep, exactly. Availability.
Yeah.
A lot like what we're going to probably see from Javonte Williams from the 21 class. I don't know if he'll ever be a multi-season full-time back.
No.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate because he's a very talented runner.
Well, his yards per game fell off, you know, 900 yards.
It's been battling injuries all year.
Injuries all year, which seems to be a thing in Seattle. Like, he's solid, and if he were to stay on the field and with the new coaching staff come in, if they commit to him a bit, you could absolutely see him jump up into that top 5 to 7 running back range. But there's more ceiling to Kenneth Walker than we've seen. We just haven't seen it yet.
He's just Slim Chubb. He's, you know, Nick Chubb if he went slimmer.
But
that's basically him.
Solid piece. And I think that, you know, for Dynasty, you can make an argument for him to be, if you're a competing team, somebody to trade for with the new regime coming in. You're making a little bit of a gamble on injuries, which stops it from being a hard buy after a down season. But the ceiling's so much higher, you're not in a sell window yet.
If you're trying to acquire, you're doing it now, because if the season starts and he is the primary back
and goes and off,
he beats out, you know, Zach Charbonnet, and it becomes, and we start to see what we saw from his rookie year, like that value is going to go through the roof. So if you believe in the talent, which you should, but if you believe that they're going to keep going with him, or just believe that the value is going to be good enough, you trade for him now.
Mm-hmm. James Cook, solid season with the Bills. First one really having the focal point of the work. Part of that's thanks to an early Damian Harris injury that allowed him to take over that. And James Cook was very, very good for redraft this year. 1,100 yards, just 2 touchdowns, which is a little bit of a bummer. You're going to have that when you're in an offense with Josh Allen, but 4 receiving touchdowns, involved in the receiving game. Very, very good. Buffalo doesn't typically like to invest in the running back position, so you could have a multi-year top 10 back here.
It's because they haven't hit on you until now.
Yeah, right.
They got something, but this is also due to the lack of their inability to draft receivers to find receiving help. Thankfully, Cook's got a dual threat skill set to him to help with that, but, you know,
second year, Buffalo's put a back out there that's been week in, week out startable. So, you know, as long as they don't
invest
any high draft capital, as far as running backs go, you expect a 2 to 3 year shelf life, and you're probably in that window for James Cook. You know, ceiling's touchdown dependent. You don't have a strong buy there. You don't have a strong sell there right now, I don't think. I think you just ride this out.
I think he's
rebuilding.
A firm RB2.
Yeah,
he's never gonna have high touchdown upside. He plays in an offense with Josh Allen.
Right,
he's 205 pounds. Like, that's not his role. You hope that he's better than Singletary. So I believe in him for more than a season.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
The very least.
Now Rashad White, this is another one you're watching closely. Great in the receiving game, kind of meh as a runner. Did get the bulk of the work all season. I think the Bucs. You find the Bucs. I want to add a bit here to this backfield, to where it's not all Rashad White. You know, no question, he proved himself as a receiver. 70 targets, 64 receptions, 549 yards, 3 touchdowns. But as a runner, was once again under 4 yards per attempt, just 58 yards per game on 16 attempts per game. So not a ton of efficiency there. 6 touchdowns is nice. You'd like to see a little bit more efficiency out of that. 272 attempts, 990 yards. It's a back end one with the receiving work, but I fully anticipate Tampa Bay is going to try to bring something else in here to help boost that run game.
They need to.
They do.
I mean, you almost have to, because everyone else behind Rashad White is nothing. I mean, they were bringing in Chase Edmonds last week, mm-hmm. and he was doing pretty well running, but Chase Edmonds is also aging out. So, yeah, you need definitely some young blood in there. And Rashad White isn't exactly the youngest one here either.
No.
At least he'll be the pass catcher.
He will be the pass catcher.
Oh,
he's going to have flexing.
He's paired with a quarterback that loves to check it down.
Yeah. He's going to have flex value in PPR. He's going to be change of pace. It's somebody I would be much more comfortable not giving 300 touches to if I were the Bucs, I think. And that's what this was. This is a back that had 330 touches. And I think that needs to be lower, especially given the struggle in the run game.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what his ADP looks like for redraft and best ball.
Yeah,
in Dynasty, you don't see a lot of hype on him. I think a lot of people understood
what it was,
where his ceiling was, and what he was. He was never going to be an efficient runner. Plus, the Bucs have a bad offensive line.
Yeah,
which doesn't help.
And
yeah, for sure.
Now
he's
would
like
argue,
Najee Harris with just, you know, better hands.
Yeah. Now I would argue if you get through the draft without them making a splash, you got a pretty good sell window on that too.
I don't think this is a particularly strong draft class. The free agent running back is also weak.
That's
there's a strong wide receiver class.
You can roll for another year.
Him as a pass catcher,
You can roll for another year if you're competing, but if you're not, roll off of it because running backs are a commodity, and if he gets through unscathed, you can get a premium for that, I think, because he got if he got through untouched.
I would almost be excited if they brought somebody in.
Rookie-wise or free agent-wise? Like a Braylon Allen, like rookie-wise?
Mostly, someone that's going to give the community some pause in a way because, again, he's got such a strong receiving profile that even if they brought in someone to take down his top five snap share and his take away from his top 10 opportunity share, fine. He's still going to be a very productive receiving back. He was able to be productive, in a backfield with Leonard Fournette. Yes, aging and bad Leonard Fournette, but still a back that was there to take on a lot of his own touches. I'm not paying a premium by any means for him, but I'll take if there's a strong enough dip, if a guy like Braylon Allen, who it sounds like the community is getting really high on.
Yeah. So
if he lands there, I'll take White.
Let me ask you this. Talking fantasy, they bring somebody else in, you're not excited, in my opinion, because you can give me 330 touch Rashad White or you can give me 180 touch Rashad White. And both are valuable. I'm not arguing that.
Yeah.
But if you get through the draft season with 330 touch Rashad White and you're not surefire running after a title, you got to flip that, because when 330 touch Rashad White turns into 180 touch Rashad White, you're getting a dip in production.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, no one wants to see 272 carry for Rashad White. We want to see 70-plus target Rashad White.
But for fantasy football, you do, because 270 carry Rashad White is 990 yards, 6 touchdown Rashad White.
God, it's so bad. It's
a lot better than 480 yard, 1 touchdown Rashad White. So that's the argument for that.
Again, cost. Like you said, we're going to have an idea of what the backfield looks like by the time, best ball redraft.
Next time we talk about this, we'll know more. But because we will go through team previews later in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
That'll come up. So,
absolutely.
All right. Next couple. TDP, nothing. Brian Robinson didn't pan out. Good story after surviving getting shot, but didn't pan out. Damian Pierce won.
He did pretty good this past season. Brian Robinson did.
He had a good year, too.
He did have a good year. You're right. That was a misstate by me.
At him now, he's the ultimate sell high because you don't know which direction that keeps going, coaching-wise.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
He's
still.
And also, he's just a guy. He's a Jag.
That's exactly it. He was right around 1,000 scrimmage yards, 9 total touchdowns. I mean, copy and paste the Rashad White discussion.
But he doesn't catch passes at the same rate.
He's just a runner.
Yeah.
I mean, he could, but
35 balls on 43 target. It's not Rashad White rate, but it's not, just a runner rate either. I mean,
43 targets is it's still a bit of a difference.
10.2 yards per reception is not terrible.
70 cut. Yeah.
In the receiving.
No.
So that's what I'm saying. It's not a Rashad White. Yeah, 70 yard reception. But it's not.
Okay, now, if he survives through the draft process, free agent process, and his hype starts to rise.
Yes.
Yes. I would sell him before White.
Yeah. And a 51 yard reception, by the way, does not bump the average up that high on, it doesn't inflate it that much on 36 receptions. It would inflate it a lot on 12, but not that much on 36. Maybe a yard or two, which is still decent. Beyond that, Zamir White, everyone's watching Josh Jacobs. We saw Zamir White have some really productive games near the end of the season, so that's what you're watching for him. You're watching what they do with Jacobs. If it's Zamir White coming out of the draft, then you've got a year or two of him being decent. Isaiah Spiller was nothing. Pierre Strong Jr., nothing. Haskins, nothing. Tyler Allgeier.
A thorn in the Bijan Robinson side.
My favorite player because he's a thorn in Bijan Robinson's side.
Arthur Smith's bastard love child. That's now gone. So we'll see.
Yeah, there should be a fall off there. Algier shouldn't have gotten the one he got. Algier is also, both things can be true. Algier can be very, very productive for a guy that went 8 pick 151. And you're very, very happy with that. And it can be somebody we picked late in the draft and somebody we'd like to do something that has done something. Can also be days are numbered. And that's what it is. You've already missed your window.
Yeah. Your sell window was before the draft last year.
Yes. Yep. Your sell window was after when he was getting used and Bijan wasn't in the middle part of the
sell window was after week one. Yeah. Yeah. That's also true.
Snoop Connor, nothing. Jerome Ford, good in pinch hit duty. Kyren Williams.
Actually, no, I'd stay with Jerome Ford for a second because of Nick Chubb. We don't know exactly when he's going to be coming back for the start of the season. So
a lot cleaner of an injury than expected, which favors him. But plus three injuries instead of midseason.
Is he going to come back 100%, or are they going to put him, or are they easing back in? Jerome Ford could be an easy flex to start out the season already.
Cleveland loves Kareem Hunt too. Like, Ford should have gotten running and receiving. Hunt's pretty much fucking shot at this point. I can see him getting some late round love, right? If there's rumors that Chubb maybe starts to hear in the public or he's not full speed in terms of his recovery, you know, if he's not 100%.
Ford was really up and down, looking at it.
He's a fine handcuff. Yeah.
He was really up and down and kind of touchdown dependent. But I see your point. I mean, if nothing else happens there and Chubb starts slow, but I mean, you're still in a. Because Kareem Hunt's still under contract, right? Or is he a free agent?
I think he only signed for 1 year. I think he's a free agent.
He went back to Cleveland. He was signed. I think they only signed him for a year.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I get the point, right? I mean, there's flex value there, but only until Chubb's back up to speed. So,
yeah.
You're talking half a season, which is just a hold.
You might get some you might get some early season opportunity. Yeah.
Kyren Williams looks to be the guy in Los Angeles and looked fantastic doing it, Dan.
Yeah.
Cool. Can't wait for him to get replaced by arguably the worst running back room in football. By replace, I mean by someone gets drafted there to take on some, you know, of the heavy, you know, touch load for running back that's sub 200 pounds. Yes, I am super pumped. Also, he should be better. I hope he can buck the day three running back trend.
Actually,
production to nothing.
His touch load wasn't that well. You missed games, though. I was going to say his touch load wasn't that heavy, but he missed games. So,
I mean, I'll pull up his.
Well, I'll extrapolate that out real quick.
I want to know what his opportunity share was when he was healthy because.
All of it?
It was Royce high. Freeman, and Akers was traded early on in the season, and he replaced Akers by week two. He was top five opportunity share. He was number one in snap share. Like when he was healthy, it was his backfield.
Yes, he was. And he was real fucking good at it, though.
Yeah, he was very good. Also, probably one of the highest prime regression candidates.
This is a good 370 touch scenario, but on the flip side, this is also a good 250 touch scenario, right? Even if you were to take a lot of that away, 5 yards per attempt, pretty involved in the receiving game, ton of touchdown work.
Yeah, he was very solid.
But you're right. He's a regression candidate because 15 total touchdowns over 11 games immediately makes him a regression candidate.
It's just. He's $194. If he was 30 pounds heavier, he'd be top three dynasty back. He'd be an easy top five pick in redraft first round. It's just we get reminded of his profile every fucking year to avoid guys at their high cost. You're not just avoiding them because of what it may suggest. It's that their cost is always so fucking high.
I want to be wrong, because I would like to see some of the data, you know, start to move towards day three backs being more of a productive back overall. But we're always constantly chasing the next Arian Foster. And that was but 15 years ago at this point.
There's a reason that you are, and that's because there are the Tyler Algiers and the Kyren Williamses and, you know, of the world, and we can go through the last draft classes and figure out that, like, look, I'm going to spitball a little bit here, but, you know, a third of your RB1s on any given year are going to be day three guys, and that's why people are taking shots at them and trying to find them. That's why RB is a thing.
Again, it's more so buying them. It's more so you take shots in them during your rookie draft. You get them when they're cheap, mm-hmm. and then they're easy flip candidates. Like they're constant.
They're so easy high flip candidates, and I, you know what, he is. You are absolutely right. He is a flip candidate.
That's more so where I was going with it is that,
and
like, we got lucky with Pacheco so far.
Well,
right now he could be Philip Lindsay. We don't know.
But you could hit that again. I mean, that could all die in a year too, and that's the same for everybody. We saw same draft class.
Well,
so Damian Pierce already had his one and done. Yeah. We're gonna see it with Algier here. Like,
I mean, it was with Algier even last year. I mean,
yeah,
he had his production, but he fell off
because
pretty hard at the end of the year.
What running backs do, and
well, there's no actual investment. Like Jahmyr Gibbs may be small, but he like the team's clearly invested in him.
Oh my God, Gibbs,
and they'd be fine. If Kyren got first round or a day two capital, yes, the tune would be different because of the historic data suggesting that the team's probably going to commit to him.
That's why you need to rethink how
he was in a day two. Remember? And then he had the combine, and then he just fell.
Oh, yeah, he was a top three pick by most people's regards. And then he had a horrific combine. He had a horrible combine.
Yeah. But, you know, other than the fact that you try to hit on this because you have to. Because that's what running backs do, right?
And what's sick, and what's terrible is that he did it in his second year, not his rookie year. That's what he was forgotten about in his rookie season. He wasn't doing shit.
Yeah, and then he does it in his second year, and then we'll see. And your point about him being a flip candidate, you were right. He is a flip candidate. Does that mean he's going to fall off a cliff next year? No, absolutely not. It's exactly what we always say about flip candidates, is that you try to hit the bell curve. He can regress without falling off of a cliff. And you're fine, but you're betting on the fact that running backs have a short shelf life, and running backs that are later round draft picks have an even shorter shelf life, and that you might give up a year of productivity to get peak ROI on that if you're not competing.
You're win now. It's buy high, sell low. I never do the buy low, sell high.
You are expecting a fall off with still production.
Yes.
You're selling at the idea of that the person buying them is getting peak what we got.
The person buying expects a repeat, and that you expect regression to something that's maybe a tier or two less than what he did this year, which is still productive.
I also think the common dynasty player is smarter than what they were even 5 years ago. I think Williams is the most untradeable person.
I disagree.
You're never going to pay what the buyers want, and the sellers aren't going to get what the buyers want to pay.
Unless,
like, we're basically where, like, it's like
there's a,
he's not a Chris McCaffrey, though.
You can partner up on that, right? There is a way to make that work and to make that make sense.
Well, sure, in trade packages and shit like that.
To make that happen in trade packages and with teams that are in the right state and they, you know what they're shooting for. But my dynasty strategy is also flipped too, to where you don't draft running backs is a rebuilding team high, unless you plan to flip them.
Well, thankfully, a lot of championship. I mean, there's a lot of just where he was going in his rookie drafts was, again, prime candidate for everything. Like, you're happy. Anyone that has him and traded in
is
probably picked him
up.
I'm sure he was probably fucking dropped. And he's probably dropped in dynasty leagues after his rookie season.
Most places. Yeah. So
I hope. I want him to be good.
Yeah,
not because I like him, but I just want to see consistent trends. I want to see. Yeah.
I don't like him. Like, him.
I don't
like him.
Like him.
Yeah.
Do you like me? Check the box. Yes or no.
What can be true, what can be true and is true is that Kyren Williams, Isaiah Pacheco, Tyler Allgeier, all gave you already better than what you paid in rookie draft capital.
I mean, yeah, yes. Better value than Dameon Pierce.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. But Allgeier was also, I think he was drafted out of all of them. He wasn't on the Dameon Pierce trajectory.
No.
But he was pretty close.
And then, let's see. Behind that, Ty Chandler, Kevin Harris, Tyler Beatty, Keyonte Ingram, Tristan Ebner, Britton Brown, all ended up being just guys. Isaiah Pacheco, pick 251. Great year for the Chiefs. Took, you know, this is a lot like Kyren Williams, right? Except I think you saw some flashes out of Pacheco last year, too. Towards the end of the season. So
little he got his run. He got some run in 22. Yeah,
little different in that regard, but end of the day, it's the same argument.
He at least, I mean, he had competition. It wasn't like the entire backfield. Towards the end of the season, it was definitely, but he always had, there was always some sort of competition.
Well, we're just
at least for the receiving and work, he was gonna for sure.
That he didn't like Cam Akers and he didn't exist and Kyren Williams ran him out of town.
Sean McVay ran Cam Akers out of town. Let's not act like that. Cam Akers also was efficient his rookie year. Not maybe efficient, but also had an extremely large workload. Gets hurt. Hates how the team has handled his whole recovery process. Gets put into a doghouse, and then we get Kyren Williams, who also had to compete for half a game. But I believe in Pacheco more than I believe in Kyren long term. At least he did it 2 years.
We'll talk about it next year.
For 2 years. No, we might talk about it. Yeah. Might. We'll talk about it, but not in a podcast next year.
That's absolutely right. We'll talk about it. You know, I am fucking forgetting, but it won't be on a podcast. All right, wide receivers. The wide receiver
this class is even disappointing to me too.
It's disappointing. Yeah.
Class.
It's like disappointing in the most meh way, right? Because it's like you look at the guys that went early, and it's like it's not been bad, but
you have two.
Jameson Williams is still needs
no
to prove it.
Bust.
Yeah. Well, and here you go, right? Drake London. He got Arthur Smith. He's had some really good games. He's had some really good stretches. He's had some really bad games. Garrett Wilson looked incredible rookie season. He gets Zach Wilson and then Rodgers and stuck on a bad offense.
Okay, but what is the difference between year one, year two outside of lose? He had the same quarterback.
Well,
not consistently.
Okay, yeah.
It was Zach Wilson his rookie season for most of it, right?
But not
right. Consistent.
And he had some Flacco, right? Did he have some Flacco that his rookie year? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes. I'm pretty sure. I mean,
but he had Rodgers for four
seasons. Both seasons were over 1,000 yards. So I mean,
I know that's what I'm like.
It's
I love, dude. I'm eating up to Garrett Wilson.
I'm not
by low right now, man.
I'm not talking shit about the guy. I'm just saying the Jets have been a bad offense, which has led to some inconsistent performances, and I think you would call that fair, even though the overall end of season stuff has looked decent. 1,000 yards isn't what it used to be in a 7-game season. It's not terrible, but the touchdown numbers are low. 3 and 4.
Yeah, I mean, that's the argument,
right? You got a wide receiver here waiting to be elite. Like, you could say the same thing for London Wilson and Olave. They've all shown the ability to string together good games, to string together 100-plus yard games and big touchdown games and to put up big numbers, but they're all hamstrung by mediocre offenses and teams that have failed to build around them or put things in place for them in one way or another.
I've never been excited for a player to get a quarterback since, I guess, DJ Moore.
I'd be excited if any of these three guys could get a quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, you got back-to-back, same thing, right? Olave's first two seasons have actually been better than Wilson's on the stat sheet.
He hasn't lost a quarterback. also his thing, but he also had to deal. I mean,
21
Winston 14. And Derek Carr has been at least a little bit better than what two Zach Wilson seasons for Wilson.
Really similar. There's a 20-yard, two touchdown difference between Williams and Olave over the first two seasons.
Is there really?
Yeah, 20 yards and two touchdowns between Wilson and Olave. That's it.
I love how their best comparables are each other on Player Profiler.
Yeah, it makes sense, right?
It's yeah.
Like the Spider-Man
for some
meme.
Reason, it just for some reason, though, I just like Olave more. I don't know. Like, I can't
I
figure out the real reason why. Wilson more.
I like
Olave
like
more.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I just, for some reason, I just gravitate towards Wilson.
The same fucking plan.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like, damn near the same fucking player. And Drake London is about 500 yards behind him, but, you know, Arthur Smith, right?
He's got fucking everything going.
Yeah.
Against him.
So let's move beyond those three, because all three of those guys are, you could argue, are buy low candidates, and you could argue that, you know, Garrett Wilson, you see an immediate come up. That's a huge buy low. Drake London, if they redo the infrastructure around him, that's a buy low. Chris Olave, you can assume that's not going to change, and he's just been solid. But, you know, there are weeks for all three guys that leave you wanting more. Jameson Williams has been tumultuous.
Yes. Agree.
Unlike Trey Lance of wide receivers.
Yes, he is. Unlike the others, he hasn't put it together. He had the injury, and then you have the gambling suspensions, and it just has not been anything consistent.
He hasn't proved the 12th overall pick.
No. Well, and part of that
is he's not even worth a day two pick.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately for him.
Part of that is that Amon-Ra broke out as the one, too.
Like, I mean,
you don't need him to be the one when you're on a team with Amon-Ra St. Brown doing what he's doing.
But his role was never going to be a volume role. Like, you didn't need
a deep threat.
You didn't need Amon-Ra to
if
realize Amon-Ra that.
If Amon-Ra doesn't pan out, volume's got to go somewhere, right?
If they're constantly running him deep and he can't get on the field, it ain't going to fucking him.
J-Mo won't even die.
You don't want it to.
J-Mo could have a huge freaking catch last week. And like, if he would have dove for it, he would have had it, but he just let it drop.
He's got.
And that's why his dynasty value is
bad. He's got what you
want to
see.
One catch he didn't dive for.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was it last week. Like it was like, oh my God, there it is. Jump. Yeah. And he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Nope.
The Jahan Dotson breakout never happened.
Almost like touchdown regression hit him right in the face. Not to his own problems.
He was on a terrible offense, too.
He's tethered to Sam Howell, but he also can't beat out receivers. He should be able to. It's just Dotson's
like a
three
candidate,
and that's fine. I don't think there's a lot of ceiling to him anymore. That's the issue.
The problem. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's just like he couldn't beat out anybody. He was relatively healthy this year, right?
Buy for nothing, and yes, he was.
So that's just my problem. It's just
next two have not been healthy: Treylon Burks and Christian Watson.
Fucking Burks
and
fucking Watson
bust too.
And Watson
yeah. bust.
Burks bust never bumps into anything. Watson bust because he can't stand.
At
the
least
field,
Watson's though. Got some. All at least when Watson was healthy, he did something. But
yeah,
you got these.
Yeah, he had
receivers
that little mini burst. That was it.
Yeah, but
Watson,
I mean,
though,
I
you
still
got all
think
these...
Watson's also still young.
He
all
is.
All these other wide receivers around him, though.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Prototypical
size
should have him as the team's one.
Prototypical size, my ass. That all stops when you got three other guys that have produced while you've been out there nursing your hamstring. And
I'm saying he's got size. That's literally all I'm saying.
We all have size.
But Jesus, I can name a billion receivers right now that haven't been anything because they have size.
A billion? And start right now. I want to hear eight digits, seven digits, eight digits.
You don't want to hang out that long. I know better. You get my point. It's not the
I know.
Can't stay on the field and. What happens when you can't stay on the field is that guys get to stay on the field and then they produce and then you got
to
fight harder to get your spot.
I can't believe I have to defend Watson. This feels weird.
And the thing with the Packers right now is that Jaden Reed has proven himself, and Dontavian Wicks has had some big plays down the stretch, and Bill Melton has proven himself a bit, and
Josh
now
Dobbs,
Romeo Dobbs, yeah.
That one too.
Also, hey, he's also been a part of that production cycle. Watson also been productive and healthy. Maybe Green Bay has just found a
maybe
great
Green Bay
home
is just
for receivers.
One of those teams where they're going to spread the ball out and you're fucked.
Yeah.
But
then you want none of them.
Yep. Or you want all of them, but not
you want all of them.
You want the, or you want the cheapest one. But you know,
who
it's going to
be the cheapest one.
Melton, probably right, Wicks or Melton. But
it'd be Melton.
Yeah. But I think Reed is probably the most consistent one that I would target.
Reed's probably surpassed Watson in cost.
I think so. And that's not saying
they're
that
both,
you
can probably both get them both for round two picks.
And that's not saying that you can't take flyers on Watson, but with the injuries and stuff like that, and the way that other guys have gotten opportunities and look good with them, him ever reaching that ceiling we saw out of him is going to be a lot harder.
Hey, he was drafted as a wide receiver too last year in most leagues.
Yeah.
And, which, again, if you listen to our show, you would have never taken up
on. We never understood
why. He was
never
worth a fifth or sixth. Never. Ever. Now, the improvement of Jordan Love and how the Green Bay offense has looked, Watson's got insane athletic measurables.
Hey, the narrative was wrong, but the result was right.
Process doesn't matter, Matty. It's all about the results in this case.
That's right.
Who cares about process over results when we're right in the wrong way?
Yeah. Wandale Robinson, about what we all expected. Can't stay healthy, undersized. That was always a what the hell pick.
Way undersized.
John Metchie, you know, unfortunately, you missed your rookie season and most of your second year of OTAs due to injuries and illness, and it's a great story, but all that did was give Nico Collins a chance to break out and Tank the team a chance to draft Tank Dell, and you're surpassed at that point. So just, it's unfortunate that's how it landed, but
he could maybe be the team's three.
Yeah, he could.
I think he'll become the team's three. Yeah. And Dell, injuries a lot this year.
There'll be opportunity.
I think Collins could be
sliding into kind
one,
of what Noah Brown did if Noah Brown leaves town.
God.
Yeah.
I'll make a proud father while watching Noah Brown.
I love Noah Brown. Tyquan Thornton, nothing. George Pickens. Pickens is the one guy that should the Steelers do something quarterback wise, or even if they don't, that I think is just
stick with Mason Rudolph. God, I want to say that out loud ever again. Yeah. But
Pickens,
he's the best thing for Pickens.
Begging to be able to break out over 1,000 yards, 1,100 yards, 5 touchdowns. This is a breakout season for Pickens, and I think the ceiling is even higher if they can get more consistent at quarterback play and more consistent with the offense.
And they can get him consistently bought in.
Yeah.
Right? There's some of the concerns throughout the year that he wasn't as bought in. Like, he's better than Chase Claypool, so I don't think they're going to make him draft his predecessor by any means. But it's almost like you got to keep him bought in. And with them keeping Tomlin and keeping that consistency and getting rid of Matt fucking Canada. Hopefully, they can find something and continue to hammer it home.
I think so. And this is a great year. You know, there's still some buy low-ish potential, but because there's still ceiling, I think you can hit. Pickens, if you were to redraft this, would be drafted where Jameson Williams was.
Yes,
I think I was taking Pickens over J-Mo, so I'm good.
You were.
I was also famously low on J-Mo, but that's fine.
Yeah,
and I was high just because of my Detroit homerisms.
Yeah, see, this is I tend to draft players from teams I don't like just because I don't want to draft players from teams I do.
Right. All right. Going beyond that, you kind of get into nothing. Alec Pierce hasn't panned out. Sky Moore has been injuries. Bayless Jones is a piece of shit. Which I knew. Jalen Tolbert, that was a disappointment.
That one hurts, but
that one hurts.
We got at least two rounds later. We got something. All right.
Danny Gray, he's coming by nothing. Romeo Doubs has had some nice stuff.
Was he a third round pick? Doubs?
Overall 132. So no.
So early fourth.
Early fourth.
Late mid to late mid fourth.
Yeah.
Mid to late fourth.
Calvin Austin, nothing. Nope. Khalil Shakir is shown a little bit, but nothing in Buffalo has been consistent. And
I think, unfortunately, he'll be a product of being replaced.
I think so, too. I don't ever remember saying Montrezl Washington's name at any point during this draft class or after.
Nope.
Kyle Phillips had that one good week, his first week out, that he's been 90% of the time since.
That was it.
Great. Is he going to be a thing? I think the following week he had two dud games and out.
He did two dud.
Shout
games
out to the legend Kyle
weeks.
Phillips.
They missed six
fucking
weeks.
Legend.
Jalen Naylor, Phillips. Nothing.
My favorite legend.
Mike Woods, nothing. Bo Melton, Samori Tor. Bo Melton, we've talked about, flashed a little bit for the Packers, but already on a second team. Derek Young is a name that I've never said, and Samori Toure, actually flashed a bit last year at the Packers. Is another one of those glut of young wide receivers, but he's been surpassed at this point.
He'll be at a new team or practice squad. Yeah, we don't have to worry about him.
Yeah.
But he was picked 258 too, so.
Yeah.
Tight ends.
McBride, woo!
Trey McBride. Trey McBride, your two breakout.
Yeah.
Yay. Jelani Woods, injured all the time. Greg Dulcich, pretty much hurt all this season after a good rookie season. I don't really see much beyond this. Chigokonkwo had a good flash his rookie year.
Jeremy Rucker didn't do anything.
No. Jeremy Rucker, nothing. Cade Otton fell off a cliff, I think.
He had a touchdown last week. I mean, he has he's an up and down game. He's a very good tight end still, but he's not.
This is year two, right? You've got these guys like Dulcich who splash that could get healthy and late breakout. Cade Otton could have late breakout after he splashed a little bit. Jake Ferguson with the Cowboys is starting to carve something out. Isaiah Likely has been fantastic in pinch hit duty of Mark Andrews.
I can't wait to see what second team picks up Likely. Or
I can't either, because that's going to be good. Or if they let Andrews walk and stick with Likely.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my hope.
But when Likely gets to be the guy, he's going to be a guy. So, I mean, just remember that as you're going through Dynasty, because that is somebody you can buy on and hold for a later tight end breakout, which you have to do with tight ends. There's almost no way around it. You got to be willing to wait on them.
You got to ignore this year. This year doesn't really count. It was an anomaly year for – it was a unicorn year for rookie tight ends.
Right. Most of the time, you got to wait on them a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was really nothing behind this. Grant Calcaterra had nothing. Connor Hayward, John Coke, like Kieft. Yeah, anyway, not talking about
it's Trey McBride. And thank God that he broke out in the way he did.
Really, McBride, Woods, Dulcich, Otten, Ferguson, Likely, Okonkwo are the ones that we could talk any type of value around. We're not going to. We just could.
You can listen to the other Lutnia podcast that I'll talk about.
Oh, I'm not going to, because Okonkwo fell off so hard and that offense is so toast, and Ferguson, Otten, Bellinger, Dulcich all fall in the same realm of like, yeah, they flashed enough to where I wouldn't be surprised, but are you betting on it?
You're basically, you have to be above streaming level tight end to be worth talking about.
Yeah.
Like beyond just a few words.
Yeah.
And right now it's just McBride from this class.
Looking at other positions real quick. I don't see anything that really jumps out in the offensive line side of this. Like, Jordan Davis at DT has been solid.
I don't know.
Kind of shitty.
Yeah, it's been
Carl Laffis has been good for defensive end.
Yeah, Carlotis, Hutchinson, Thibodeau.
Yep.
Like defensive end, actually,
Edge for sure.
Yeah. Yep. Edge.
Edge. Quay Walker's been good. Devin Lloyd's been good. Is that really it for linebacker?
Maybe.
I think that is. Huh.
I'm scrolling.
Quarterback, you had
no. Kobe Dean's actually had some good. It was just
he's been good for fantasy.
He was hurt. Yeah. Kobe Dean's been good this year. He was gone almost his entire rookie year and the first part of this year. So now that he's been on the field, yes. But I'm an Kobe Dean manager, so
yeah, me too.
I know exactly what the waiting game was like on that one.
Yep, same.
And I mean Stingley and Sauce have obviously been good. But
fantastic for both.
Kyler Gordon for the Bears has been solid. Yeah. Yep. Kind of a mess.
It's not really, really good.
No, not really. There's people, but there is no piece of this. It's like, oh, that was great. Kyle Hamilton.
Kyle Hamilton's been pretty fucking
good. Kyle Hamilton. So is Jaquan Brisker when he's been on the field. Brian Cook for the Chiefs was having a good year. Kirby Joseph for the Lions, other than diving at knees.
Nope. They'll never say a good thing about that, man.
Good Lord. Cade York for the Browns. Yeah. Jordan Stout, good punter for the Ravens. Matt Ariza got kicked out of the league, and the Bears are getting ready to cut Trenton Gill for punters. So, four punters drafted in this draft class, if that tells you.
Or the brand.
Or the brand. All right. Cool. That's the show. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. We have one more check-in of the 2023 class. So this past year's rookies will be next week's discussion, as well as the Super Bowl matchup and a recap of the championship games and anything that might break in the news cycle. So coaching carousel should be winding down, so we should be able to cut 20 to 30 minutes off the show by not having coaching carousel shit to talk about.
There we go.
So, all right. Thank you all for tuning in. Catch you next time.
Bye. See ya.
See ya.